15 to 20 million.
Jump out!
I am your future.
Isn't it about time for a change?
We're our national leader.
AmericanWorkersRadio.com. You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products with your host, Michael Blihash.
Well, welcome once again to another edition of American Workers Radio here on 860. As you know, we serve southeastern Pennsylvania, the state of New Jersey, and northern Delaware on the radio itself. However, on the internet, you can tune in from anywhere in the USA or anywhere in the world simply by logging on to AmericanWorkersRadio.com and click on the Listen Live link. And as always, after today's show, we will send out a rebroadcast. And of course, I ask that you send it out to family members and friends. Well, here we are already on the 4th of July. Can you believe it? How quickly time flies. I remember talking with you on the 4th of July about the 4th of July last year, and here we are, another whole year has passed, and so many exciting things have been happening in the last year. I want to first of all say thank you to our panel members who were with us last week. They include Mark Andel, the founder of the Made in America store, Larkin Connolly, the national small business advocate, and also Rich Logis, the principal of RJL Technology Integration, and our engineer, Henry Chaplinsky, and Shane Maziash is with us here in the studio. And of course, Shane was there last week as well. And I thank all of you for spreading the word about the broadcast and inviting people to tune in. I also have greetings for a happy 4th of July from Curtis Ellis, as you know, is the executive director of the American Jobs Alliance and an advisor to President Donald Trump. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I want to tell you, 242 years ago, Americans got together here in the great city of Philadelphia and signed the Declaration of Independence. Since then, we've been celebrating the 4th of July as America's birthday. And boy, is it going to be a great, great year as we see so many things changing in the economy, more people getting back to work, more of the school boards talking about getting the job skills back in the schools and programs of all types that'll get young people interested in working and being successful in their life. You know, so much has changed since 1776, when our forefathers actually wrote and signed the Declaration of Independence. The main focus at that time was the ideals of freedom, peace, and justice for all. Well, here we are 242 years later, and we're watching the same thing happening as happened many years ago. As you know, for centuries, Americans were the hope and the help, the hope, land of hope, and also the welcoming point for immigrants from around the world who mainly came here to be part of the Industrial Revolution. In more recent years, we see that people from foreign countries fleeing poverty and all sorts of dictators have been trying to come to America. And in more recent years, we've also seen nations of the world seeking to expand their own job possibilities for their people. And we saw how well-versed their people were in attracting those jobs out of the United States to their countries, seeking cheaper labor costs, growing government regulations here in the United States, and of course, endless taxes on businesses. That's changing. Well, since 1976, when we marked that anniversary, that was the 200th anniversary of America, we also watched something that wasn't reacted to too well at that time. It was leaders, people, businesses, and also workers saw that a lot of the industries were becoming automated. They saw that automation required fewer workers, and they urged business leaders at that time to retool their industries to manufacture the new items constantly, and I mean constantly, being invented in America, to make those industries come alive in America. But our people didn't do that. Our leadership ignored the needs and concerns of the American people and just continued to act as though nothing was happening. So during the last 42 years since we celebrated the 200th anniversary of America, we saw a lot of jobs decline, a lot of skills lost. And we on this broadcast, with the help of people like Larkin Connolly, Rich Logis, Mark Andel, and Shane and Henry Chaplinsky joining me each week, are doing a lot to help bring attention to the fact that we need jobs, we need education focused on future jobs, so forth and so on. So with that, I'm going to ask, first of all, Mark, to give us some 4th of July greetings and tell us what's been happening up your way.
Yeah, very exciting times, Mike, and welcome Larkin and crew, Henry, Shane. Just the 4th of July, guys. It's time to light them fireworks. It's a great celebration. Again, at the Made in America store, we celebrate and honor our veterans every day, our freedom every day. I'm absolutely guilty of loving America, and I'm proud of it. Support the country you live in. We're a great, great country, and these are great, great times. Mike, we've got our largest show, well, second largest show of the year starting tomorrow at Jam in the Valley. Henry would love it. We'd get Henry up on stage, but we got six big national bands, and this is our time of year, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, to celebrate. And then Saturday night we do the fireworks with music to them, which is just awesome. But great time of year, Mike, a lot going on. I'll tell you, the movement's alive and well, and in 8 years, we're the strongest we've ever been. We're going to hit 800 buses in about a month that visited the store in the last 8 years. We're selling the Kitchen Craft cookware. We're the first retail store for David Hurley's Kitchen Craft, which was invented in 1906, waterless cooking, seven layers of metals and materials joined together, and it's just the number one cookware in the country. But he's always done 4,000 years or so, Mike, or a year, and by shows like fairs and whatnot. But we're the first retail store that he believed in and trusted to sell it. So a lot of big things going. We're growing our store and stores. People want more and more certified, three-time certify our products, 100% made in our country. That's our concept, our core value. Of course, everyone can't be made in America 100%. But it's a shame out of 8,000 products supporting 500 privately owned American businesses, not one of the companies that supply me a product is publicly traded, which is quite a story, Mike. But out of them products, we have nothing that plugs in that takes 110 voltage or takes a battery. So that's a huge mistake over 35, 40 years. And no one can tell me any different. We as a country should be able to make 100% made in America products. And, you know, we've been to the moon, and we can't make a toaster. So there's a lot of problems going on, a lot of good change, Mike. But I'm very fired up. This is one of the greatest days of the year.
You're right. Oh, man, Mark, that was a great report. And by the way, as you mentioned, we're really moving up the ladder now. But the refusal to act by America's leaders took 42 years and really killed us in the process. We had so many declines in job opportunities that it was really sad to see. Now that we're going up the ladder, there are people in the national news media that are ignoring the successes that all of us, every American, is trying to promote and every American needs for themselves, for their children, their grandchildren, their family and friends. What is the problem? If we could just get CNN or some of the biggies to devote 1 hour a day to what we can do together to promote American. Get one of those show broadcasts devoted to American made. I'm sure their viewership would double. With us also today is Larkin Connolly. Larkin, tell me everything.
Good morning, Michael. I can tell you everything I know in about 45 seconds, but happy 4th of July to everybody. Mark, you know, a standing ovation for what you do. Last week, Rich said that you are the godfather, the inventor of the Made in America movement. If you're not, you're tied with whoever they think is ahead of you. And I applaud your efforts, and I'm honored to be able to count you amongst my friends. And I mean that very, very, very sincerely. On this 4th of July, I hope I can witness some great fireworks, some good patriotic parades, and that nobody and there are so many people out there that want to, will bring out the visceral side of their personality and in a very uncivil way decide to turn the 4th of July into anything other than a celebration. I wouldn't put it past some of the people, I will say it out loud, proudly, like Maxine Waters. I hope that she can at least give her vitriolic hatred one day rest, and that we all get a chance to celebrate tonight with fireworks and parades and patriotic backbone.
Very good, Larkin. I mean, everyone is saying just what America was founded for 242 years ago. You know, as all of us get together with family and friends on this very special day and throughout this rest of the week and weekend coming up, I know Mark said he's going to have that big concert. Make sure you do everything that you can to influence just one person to get involved with the Buy American Made campaign. It's been going on for so long that it took a new president to help us to make bigger things happen with his ideas. And one of the things I would like to see the president do and every manufacturer in America is take a look at all the trade deals, the deals that have been making problems happen in America. We've had so many people focused on getting stuff into the country. All these ships are coming in, loaded to the gill, and leaving half empty. And that's the sad part of it. So we have to get everything to where it's a 50-50. Mark, I want to see at least a number of products sold in your store that plug in and that have batteries that are made here in the USA. I'm very disappointed to see that continue.
Michael, we're honored to have in our presence today a member of the EU. My British friend, Bruce Bassett Powell, who I would be very interested in hearing from as to his comments vis-a-vis the comment you just made about the ships coming in full and going out half empty. I know Bruce has some very strong feelings in that regard.
Welcome, Bruce. How is everything with you on this 4th of July?
Happy 4th of July. I'm glad to be able to celebrate it with everyone as I have done for 40 years or so now.
Now, Bruce, I want to ask you a question before we get started. If you had to do it all over again, would you rather be here or would you rather be there?
Well, I have built a family over here, and I've built a company and employed people. I can't imagine wanting to be anywhere else.
Bruce, tell the truth. It's because the beer over there is warm and they don't have football there.
However, I must say the drinking age for beer there is 16.
It's the American Pro Bowl game that we don't have.
Is that true, Bruce? Shane just said that the drinking age in England is 16
for beer.
For beer?
18 actually.
18. Okay. Yeah. Very good, Bruce. Tell us everything. What have you been noticing about?
Since I was 14.
Well.
You and me both.
That was before they were carding as they card now. You know, the new photo ID is pretty tough. You know,
I still don't think they have those in the UK. I still think that if you're 18, if you go into a pub and they say, "How old are you?" and you say, "18," they say, "That's all right." It's not their responsibility anymore.
Well, it's funny because I was actually in London and over this past Thanksgiving, and one of the bar owners told me that it was 16 to drink beer. So I guess they're serving minors there too. So they definitely don't check for cards.
We don't get so bent out of shape about it. I mean, beer's been part of our our lives for so long. Anyway.
They'll be the right age eventually.
Bruce, I want you to meet Shane Maziash. He is part of our staff here for the summer season, and he's learned a lot, I'm sure, being here at the center. He's going to be returning to school for the September semester, and of course, he'll be with us for a few more weeks. Bruce, tell us everything.
everything's fine. I was interested to hear about your feelings on Made in America, because I absolutely fully believe that the more we make in America, the better it is. And you will probably not be happy that my company that I had for 16 years brought container after container load of products over from the Far East, European Union, and everywhere else, because I was an importer. And I'm used to tariffs. When you talk about protective tariffs, in the days when I bought teak benches over from the United Kingdom, we had to pay a 6% tariff on chairs and a 2% tariff on tables, but benches, for some reason, were like 0.8%. And that was a reason for going back in God knows where, that Americans wanted to protect their chair makers.
Now, Bruce, I want to ask you something. Do you know where that tariff money was designated?
No, I have no idea.
Did it just go into the general fund? You see, if the tariffs had a sort of a purpose, like the tariffs were going to go into the unemployment fund, I could agree 100% more with a tariff. Because if you're taking jobs away from Americans, well, then take that tariff money, put it in the unemployment fund, and help the people to be reskilled until some new job opportunities come about.
Yeah, no. That's true. But, you know, when I went to Indonesia and Thailand to import, there was no tariff at all because they were a most favored nation, which is now a dirty word to say, I believe. But, and Larkin was around for some of this, we went to all sorts of lengths to see what would happen if we made the benches over here. For a start, they were teak and tropical hardwoods, which are not easy to get here. But the cost was more than double to produce benches, which we did a lot of. And it was just impossible to even conceive of making them here. We even went as far as buying components and putting them together, but the labor costs of even doing that were completely kicked us out of the bucket when you're competing against plastic furniture and tubular aluminum furniture and stuff like that. And eventually the entire casual furniture industry, which was about 50% imports when I went into it, when I left in around 2000, there was barely any outdoor furniture at all made in the U.S.
Now, Bruce, as a person who's been in the country for some years, how do you think that benefited America, having so many imports coming to our shores and we have no work for our people?
Well, I mean, the alternative was not bringing them in or having them made here and nobody buying them. We wouldn't have had any sales of any consequence.
You know, Bruce, let me ask you something. You mentioned that you were trying to have them assembled here in the USA. What was the price differential? Was it 20%, 25% more to have it assembled here in the USA?
It was more like 60% more, 40, at least between 40 and 60, depending on what it was.
You see, bringing the shipping of it over now, that shipping costs have gone up some. It may be beneficial to have some more of those products made here in the USA.
Well, what's happened is it's this is the way the world works, and I applaud it. You know, and I won't say nature, but what's happened is that people are making plastic furniture that looks like wood out of basically scrap plastic, and that is beginning to eclipse wooden furniture, whether it's imported or not, and that's the way the world works.
I do see those products available.
Yeah,
Some of them, by the way, those molded products are made in America. I've seen it with even the Adirondacks chairs and all the tables. They are made in America.
They're actually extruded rather than molded. But no, if you go to Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, not far from you, there's two large companies that supply about 30% of the product of that kind of product in the U.S. I've worked with them. I know who they are. They're wonderful people.
Bruce, that was probably Adams, Mark. Adams, one of them. We sell the Adams manufacturing furniture, all plastic.
Well, that's really good. Yeah. I'm glad to hear that. I've even seen umbrellas that were mainly made foreign now being made here in America. Not the small umbrellas, the outdoor umbrellas. And that's good to see.
But they're still not the largest company that makes them in that imports them in California can't even be touched. And the thing is that the Chinese have driven the quality of, they've probably stuck with technologies, but, most of the outdoor umbrellas that are sold there are still Chinese, and there are American manufacturers, but they're terribly expensive. It's just one of those things. I think that... the one thing as I said before, when I started in importing, American tariffs were just as high as anybody else's tariffs until I started buying from Southeast Asia, which everybody did. I still don't think it impacts the made in America, because if it can be made in America, then it will be, even if it's a little bit expensive. Then people will buy it. And as I said, nature, if you like, I'm not sure the word is nature, but has affected it. Teak is now almost too expensive to bring over because it's an endangered species.
Right.
So life's changed probably for the better. But certainly in the 80s and 90s, importing products was... I used to bring over 100 or so containers a year. But I employed a lot of people, too. And I helped every patio store in the country, along with other people that imported, to sell a lot more goods and to make a lot more profits, which has its own benefits.
In this case, you were employing both ways. You imported... And you also help the people to assemble, to distribute. What's happened in America now, Bruce, is many of the things that are coming in the containers, the container is designated to the store that it's going to be opened up and stocked in. We lost a lot of the jobs on the decks of the ships and the group that welcome the people that are unloading the containers and distributing the stuff into local trucks. A lot of that is done. The whole container goes to the store. So more and more jobs were lost over the years. That is why it's important for us to make some level of products here. Yes, it's good to have the products assembled in America, but you also have to have some of the products made 100%, 60%, 50%. There's a lot of people I see now where the labels say, proudly made in America with international parts, assembled in America with foreign made products. That at least gives everybody a little bite at the apple.
I think so. You're right in that, as a distributor, I was a middleman, but I also employed lots of people in warehousing and distribution and that kind of thing. They've done away with the middle. I mean, Walmart doesn't buy from a person, wouldn't. I mean, I used to sell Walmart. I used to sell Sam's. We did a bunch.
I want to just introduce Dr. Shane Maziash. And Shane... You've been here in historic Philadelphia, and you're here for the 4th of July celebrating another very special event with us. I want to say How are you enjoying talking to the people, especially about the American-made issues?
So far, Michael, it's been great, and I just want to say happy 4th to everyone out there and everyone on the panel. But yeah, to continue, along with the 4th of July, I think it's important for me, especially one of my favorite holidays, not only for what it represents for our independence as the greatest country on earth, but also represents one of the few days during the year where every American can come together regardless of political affiliations, regardless of race. Everyone is on this day American. They're wearing red, white, and blue, stars and stripes. Everyone has a smile on their face, fireworks, drinking, games. Everyone's just in a happy mood, and it's very rare do you see that ever, really. One day out of 365 days is pretty much what you get, where everyone can come together and just be an American.
That's a very good point. That's a good point. We need more of that. You know, Mark, what you've done there at the Made in America store, it's almost historic, because you're bringing people in to be proud to be an American every day. Every time they walk in the door, they're proud to be. You're celebrating 4th of July 365 days a year.
Yeah, you know, people come in, they're great people. It's not an R thing, D thing. They have a ball, Mike. The people off these buses and the people, all colors, all race, veterans, non-veterans, they have a lot of fun at the Made in America store, seeing what Americans are making. We raise awareness. We try to educate them. We're consistent with our message. They appreciate that. They just have fun. They have a good time. They've always shopped. They've always been shopping. When we tell our story, what happened to us, losing half our business to China directly, they relate to that, Mike, and it changes them. I watched their eyes, and all of a sudden they're at a different level, and, boy, they support us across the country. These buses are coming from all over every state. We've even had fam tours from China, Japan, and they love it. The foreigners love our store more than most Americans because they say, support the country you live in. This is common sense, Mike. In fact, for the radio crew, even Bruce, I'll get one. I got a brand new shirt coming out, and it's coming out today. It just says Made America on the front, small logo, and on the back it says Common Sense. Buy American. It to me, it's just that simple. Support the country living. Bruce, you've had challenges, and you know, I agree with you with your business. But a lot of times you can make the change. There's other ways, and plastics came in to make change. But always try to source here, try to build it here. I think greed took over a lot. I know a lot of friends that went over to China and built companies there and moved their family over there so they could make a bigger dollar. I would never do that. I'd never leave my country that I love.
I wouldn't do that either.
It's been
but,
done.
You know, it's interesting how when I first went to Jakarta, Indonesia, which was in 1986, I remember looking out of my hotel room and I saw about two, maybe three skyscrapers. The last time I went to Indonesia was in about 2003, and there were nearly 1,000 of skyscrapers. So, you know, I know that I don't know what that means to us, but Indonesia is a very stable nation now when it wasn't 50 years ago.
And I think that's with Shanghai, China, Bruce. They said, 5,000 high rises a year, I think.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, I've got one in Buffalo.
Southeast Asia, and I mean, I've rattled around there for years, and it's just changed dramatically. So,
you're right, Bruce. It's all the visitors from China say is that they can't believe how their country has changed in 25 years. Unbelievable.
Yeah, unbelievable, yeah. And, you know, I suppose we've been responsible for some of that as the United States and the West. And to a certain extent, it's a good thing. But
we're the consumer of the world, right, Bruce?
Right. But the world's going to become a consumer. So when you talk about Made in America and, I think things will change.
You know, Bruce.
Yeah. Sorry.
Bruce, there's something that, you know, when we talked about last week during the broadcast, we talked about how some of these dictators and all held their people down. Well, that also took place in China for a long time. It was maybe 30 years ago that they started a new
communist state, isn't it?
Right. It's still communist, but they wanted something to change. They took the people out of the rice paddies and into industries because they wanted their people to be making products that they were sending all over the world with the label Made in China. Can you imagine how much more beneficial everybody would be if all those countries that are being suppressed now, all these people running over our borders, if they were being helped to have industries moved, we would be able to sell them more, they would be able to sell us more. It's just not happening. Too many negative leaders took over businesses, took over countries, and they don't want people to succeed. And this is a sad part of it. Why are people running to the United States of America? Because they see it's a better country with more possibilities. If their country was stable and had a lot of jobs and leaders that cared about them, they wouldn't have this problem. America's leaders did not care about the American people for 30 plus years. That's why we have, at this point, less business manufacturers in the USA, less skilled workers to manufacture the products, and fewer opportunities for all of us to compete with the world.
You're right.
Yeah, you know,
I wanted Bruce to comment, though, on the European situation. You know, I had a rather energetic conversation a couple of days ago about the status of exports from America to Europe that we don't somehow ever remember or count.
I think that one of the things I criticize Trump for is going on with this, the world's being so mean to America. I mean, that's an almost impossibly ridiculous statement, that they're taking advantage of America. You know, America's the most powerful nation in the world, and it doesn't allow people to take advantage. The, you know, a lot of, if you go over to Europe, it's about as Americanized a place as you'll ever find. I mean, there's a McDonald's on every street. There's a Ford makes 35% of the motor vehicles in Britain. Yes, they make them there. They don't make them here, but you couldn't export them economically. But Ford certainly makes money from doing that, or they'd give it up. But America decided to go over to Europe and set up shop there, and especially with retail outlets. I mean, half the products in our supermarkets are American brands. That's how America decided to make its impact on Europe rather than trying to export made in America stuff. And it has its huge financial benefits by the fact that you know, America is very, very much part of Europe.
I agree with that, Bruce. However, there's one thing that concerns me. The day-to-day products that the Europeans use and the Americans use are not being made in America, so they can't be sold to Europe. Yet we are bringing in the day-to-day products, including shoes and clothing, sneakers, ties, eyeglasses that people wear, all foreign-made. There should be 50-50% made in America. People should have a choice. When I go to get a new pair of glasses, I ask immediately, what do you have American made? And I'm sorry to see the person look at me like I have four heads and ask, why are you asking? I said, because I want to support American.
Maybe part of the trade talk should then be we'll allow America to export this or that good, but we want 1,000 Weatherstone pubs in the United States, and that to facilitate that, so that we can put the British imprint on America. You know, it's got to go both ways, on many fronts, not just goods.
Well, the biggest thing is, Bruce, from what I see,
how many chains of restaurants are? Do you see how many French chains of restaurants do you see in America? Almost none, and yet everything from Outback, which isn't Australian after all, Olive Garden, Red Lobster, they're all over in Europe. And that's fine. I mean, Europeans aren't complaining, but they do complain when they're accused of being unfair to America.
Well, Bruce, you go shopping at your local stores. And Mark, you go shopping at your local stores in addition to your store. And Larkin, the same thing. And Shane, Henry, we all go shopping. If we went to the store manager and said, can you direct, I'm buying a gift for somebody, can you direct me to a product that is something that I can put a battery in or a plug that's made in America? The person looks at you like, why do you need that? Well, that's the problem that happened to America. We took everything out of America and shipped it around the world and brought it back to America simply to be sold. My whole argument with everything, with the Buy American Made campaign, is to get 50% of everything that we have in our homes, our clothing, our shoes, our electronics, our cell phones, our televisions. Why can't we have a choice? Why don't we have a choice if it's made in America or foreign? If the price is more, if it's $50 more because it's American made, I wouldn't support the $50 more product because I am supporting my fellow American workers.
But let me ask you another question, Michael. Say you wanted to start a battery factory in Pennsylvania tomorrow. Where are you going to get your workers from in this day?
Well, and in this day, but Bruce, I will say this to you. We should have never reached this day. We should have never reached this day. We should have always people. We should have people available for every job possibility. The idea of saying the American people will not do this kind of job, well, that doesn't sound right to me.
Well,
because
not, my point was not that they can't do it. It's just that we've got full employment. And
we have full employment on the record. But if you look on the debt clock, which is put out by the Census Bureau and the Labor Bureau, you see we have 94 million people not in the workforce. Now, some of them are recently retired from the workforce. Others are people who are out of the workforce because they're home working with children, helping, you know, raise a family. But there is a half of those people, half of that 90 million need full and part-time jobs right now. That means is full employment of the people who are registered to be on the employment records. How about those who gave up being employed because they looked and looked and couldn't do it? How about some of them who just said, I'll stay home and raise my children because I can't find a job? I want to get all those people back into the workforce so that we can get that 90 million people not in the workforce right now be half.
Yeah, that's
true. I'm going to have to go look at the labor statistics, the recent ones, but back in the day when I fooled around in my past life with minimum wage and slightly above minimum wage operating convenience stores, the Labor Department considered 2.5% of the American public unemployable. So you're never really going to get below that 2.5%. We're in 3%. Right now, and there are jobs everywhere.
Yes.
So I don't think it's the availability of the jobs. I think it's the availability of the talent.
Talent. You're right, Larkin. How did we let that talent be lost? That's the big question.
Well, because back in the 50s, when I was born, if I was 16 in 1956, I was born in 1940. I'm not, but. I would have followed my father either out of high school and become a plumber in his business. I would have become part of a family business and a family operation. Or if he was an attorney, I'd go on to college and become an attorney if that's what I wanted to do. That doesn't go on now.
But,
we're in a second generation of hardcore unemployed
hardcore unemployed. But Larkin, where is the example? Where is the possibilities being presented to the people in the schools right now? Shane spoke a few months ago about how the job fairs and all are almost non-existent in the schools. You have to go outside the schools to the private job fairs, yet he went to a very good school, and yet no push for what do you want to be when you finally graduate.
And Mike, we talk about the breakdown of the blue-collar worker, the middle class, and I think we were talking about that. We became the throwaway world. The skilled worker made more money. My father was at Bethlehem Steel, Ford. Different. He could leave a job on a Friday, find a job on a Monday, and make a good wage. That's different, too. We're talking about, you know, if it's Walmart jobs, you got a whole different, salary per year. And I think Sherman McLeod, and Bruce, you didn't probably hear Sherman came on our show, but what he's doing with the city block, he's training the minority and people that get the welfare checks, but gave them a plan over 9 years to use that money to educate their self and teach them a skilled trade, and he puts them out in the workforce in about 6 months, and it's amazing. I think Mikey said he wants to be at producing 4,000 skilled workers a year.
Right. Now, also, guys, as I'm looking at the debt clock, I see something here which I discussed with the people in Washington who handle this debt clock in New York. We put on this full information disclosure part of the debt clock. Number one, it shows that in the year 2000, there were so many people in the labor force. It shows now with our population having grown by almost 100 million people, there's only this many people in the workforce. There are 38 million people living in poverty because of lack of jobs. How is that possible? There's 27 million people without any type of insurance. How is that possible? We have veterans that are unemployed because they were out of the country fighting for America. They couldn't get retrained when they came back, or they had other issues to address. And yet we're not paying attention to that. We're worrying about all foolishness discussed in the media without looking at how many people are actually in the workforce right now. In the year 2000, there were 157 million people in the workforce. Today, we don't have that many people in the workforce. Private sector jobs are 123 million. The rest are public employees. Larkin, we discussed this before. How is it possible in the workforce right now with public and private sector, 155 million people? In the year 2000, there were 157 million people when the population was 100 million less.
It genuinely goes back to remarks I've made for a very long time. I don't want the government running my education system. The federal government has buggered up education in this country so badly it's not even funny. I can literally point to the day that our kids started to slide from 1 and 3 and 2 and 4 way down in the top 5. In math and science, we're number 39 in literacy, reading. I mean, it's embarrassing. I can point to when that slide started and exactly when Jimmy Carter founded and made the Department of Education. They ought to be ashamed of themselves. We don't need anybody telling us in two different townships. In St. John's County, anywhere, how to educate. We have doctors that are running our school boards. Parents need to get involved. We need to hire quality people who understand how to educate, and we ought to get on with it instead of standing around with our thumb in the wrong place, waiting for Washington, D.C. to tell us what our textbooks should look like. It's so bad, it's not even bad.
Larkin, I can't agree with you more. My only question is this, and I ask this all the time of these political people who come and tell me they're trying to sell me the Brooklyn Bridge over and over again. If Jimmy Carter did that many years ago, how many presidents have we had since then that could have helped reverse the situation we're going through in America?
Well, quite frankly, Bush, too, talked about eliminating the education department altogether. And the reaction was almost frightening because our major American cities are waiting for the money that Alabama and Florida and Oklahoma put into the till. And it's all it is a redistribution.
That's
you
right.
You pay your taxes in Tredyffrin Township, and they take that money away, and they give it to New York City. That's all they're doing. And then they're telling us exactly how to educate our kids. And they have not an ounce of a clue.
Now, back in the year 2000, the median income, from what I'm looking here at the U.S. debt clock presented by the Census Bureau and the Board of Industries in America, the labor and industry, the median income in the year 2000 was $31,000. Here we are right now. It is $31,000. How have we gone up? Shane, are you looking at those statistics? What do you see?
See a lot of similarities within the numbers, and I also see some numbers that are actually lower.
Right. So my point is that by not paying attention to our own doorstep, we've hurt our people very deeply. So if the new president, and I don't care if it was Trump or anybody else, came into the picture and they started to shake up to get things back on track, we have to honor the ideas of getting back the country on track. We don't care who the person is. When Trump leaves, the next person will come in. They may not want to do anything. We'll be back to where we were 5 years ago. That's not what we need. We need to stay on a course like a train riding down the track. We have to move forward to get to the next station. We haven't been doing that. We've been allowing all of these politicians that filled these offices for years and years that did nothing to allow to be elected over and over again.
Michael, you often mention how people in the government or just people with power try to keep others down by putting them in poverty and stuff. Looking at these statistics right here, about 39 million in the United States are currently living in poverty.
Now, how is that possible in the greatest country on earth? We are allowing people coming from poverty nations to come to America through the back door, not through the legal system, and yet we have this many people living in poverty. Bruce, do you understand what I'm trying to convey to the people?
Absolutely.
Everywhere I go, we're welcoming people in. We're allowing them to seek asylum in America, which has been, you know, something we've done for centuries. However, we're not addressing our own problems right here in the United States of America. Well, we're bringing more people, more mouths to feed, more people to take jobs, instead of us focusing on those adults living in poverty. Now, for every adult living in poverty, there may be one child living in poverty, one child dependent upon government services. It's got to come to an end. We're here celebrating the 4th of July and making some common sense issues come to life.
Right.
I mean, we see it every day here in Philadelphia. My commute from where I live to Philadelphia, I have to take the train. Once I get off the train, it's about a 20-minute walk to our center. And every single day, you know, you see tens of homeless people but it extends far beyond just being homeless. The amount of people under the poverty line that they set, like I said, is 39 million. And a lot of these people you don't even know. You don't know they're in these situations. They don't present it. You know what I mean? They try to keep that in the dark.
Well, that's right. And this is where I'd like to see the national media focus. go and follow some of these people that are living on the streets. I pass those same streets, Shane, and every one of those places, it doesn't end. It grows with people, not full. What you're seeing now, I've been looking at for 10 years, and yet not one person in the news media is going out and saying, how are we going to address this issue in the United States of America as we begin our 242nd birthday, so that we don't open the door to everybody until we've taken care of our own home.
And we keep saying how great of a country America is, and I truly believe it is the best, but that doesn't mean that there aren't serious issues that go on. And I'm glad that we're able to address them and, you know, hopefully bring about some change, because a lot of these things are long overdue.
Mark, do you think that the America's media and also the national elected people have done their job focusing on the difficulties in America?
No, Mike. You know, I always say, you know, World News, you watch David Muir, whatever. You got to focus on the positive, no matter what we're talking about. We got a great show, Mike. I always thank you. This is 4th of July. Great, great time of year. Like you said, Shane, bringing people together, smiling. But we want our news. I think we talk about, you know, bad news always only sells and whatnot, but we want good news, but direct news, talking about the skilled trade shortage, exposing, getting it, the parents to okay that it would be okay for their sons and daughters to take technical classes in industrial arts and metal shops, wood shops. We need more focus, Mike, on the positive. I'm seeing busy, which is nice. We've got work again as a company with General Welding. Looking for workers is the largest problem, and a lot of these kids want to do it, but when I show them the work in 12th grade or walk them through too late, they've already got different directions going. A lot of these people and kids going to college, Shane, you know, 8 or 9 out of 10 they're going to college, but when they're done, they don't have a job because there wasn't a job for what they went for, become a money-making machine too. So there's so many avenues, Mike. No, the answer to your question, no. The media could do a much better job talking about things that we talk about on this show.
Just like you said on your shirt, common sense.
Common sense.
Where is the common sense?
But one thing I will say is you have to start somewhere. So what I mean by that is, yes, a lot of this stuff is not addressed, but maybe we're the ones that start that. Maybe right. People see we're what we're doing here, and then, you know, they reach out, and then people start to change.
I agree. Yeah. I agree. But somebody has to, in the advertising field, give the people a choice. Do you advertise during this program, or you just advertise during the regular negative news?
Yeah,
I think there's got to be some kind of a path to change, offer a balance of some type. What do you say, Bruce?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. It's balance is what it's all about, and we seesaw from one thing to another almost yearly, and I just don't think there's any stabilization.
With a country of 327 million people and only 155 million people in the full-time and part-time workforce combined, and that includes all the public employees as well, that does not hold very well. Well, we need 5 million people employed in full-time jobs to be regarded as a full employment economy. Right now, when they talk about economic conditions and also full employment, that's of the people who are in the workforce and actively looking. But you have a number of people in poverty, those who are discouraged workers. It's enormous, the amount of people that have not come into the workforce because they feel it's going to be a temporary thing. And many people, by the way, don't go into the workforce because they will lose their welfare benefits. You know that better than anybody, Larkin.
Listen, we're never going to change until we get off this bipartisan two-party bandwagon that says the left hates the right and the right hates the left.
Yeah.
We've taken that concept to a new level, and now it's not only the right hates the left and the left hates the right, it's gotten down to people on television calling the daughter of the president a feckless, very bad word. To me, the worst word in the English language.
Ladies And gentlemen of our audience, it's almost that time. I want to first of all ask every one of our panel members to give some wishes on this 4th of July to all of you, our faithful listeners. And remember to spread the word that you can listen to the broadcast anytime, the Common Sense broadcast on 860 AM, by going to AmericanWorkersRadio.com and click on the Listen Live link. Okay, I'm going to start off today with Larkin. Give us a happy 4th of July wish.
Well, I wish everybody, all of our citizens and all the people in America, a very, very happy 4th of July. Please don't forget the purpose of the holiday. It's to celebrate who we are and how we became who we are. And I wish the best for everybody. And I also wish a level of civility would overcome everybody in Washington, D.C., so that we don't have to listen to things like we have had to in the last couple of weeks.
You're right. And Mr. Mark Andel.
Yeah, I just, Mike, wish you and Larkin, Bruce and Henry and Shane and Rich, everybody, all our listeners, a happy 4th of July. Celebrate American principles and freedoms. Enjoy it. Do not be afraid of it. You're American. It's fine. Support the country you live in. We all want 50-50 fair trade, but have a good time. Fly a 100% made in America flag.
Very good. And Bruce?
Well, this will be my 44th, I think. 4th of July, and just to tell you, I was the first one to take the flag out and hang it up this morning, so that the U.S. flag out. I'm very proud to do that.
God bless you. And Shane?
Yeah, just wanted to give everyone a happy 4th of July wish, and thank everyone out there. Including all of our panel members for everything that we do, and thank you all the veterans out there as well.
And Henry?
Happy 4th of July. Hey, Mark, my mom's got a flag. It's made in USA down in their shore house. I'll be hanging that.
Thank you. I always count on you, Henry.
Ladies and gentlemen, in behalf of all of us in the Blehash family, I want to wish all of you the best 4th of July ever. Make sure you go out and spread the word about the Buy American Made campaign. Remember, our goal is to begin a new and modern industrial revolution here in the USA so that people don't live in poverty and the people that have jobs will get paid more for doing a better job because they are part of the new and modern industrial revolution here in the USA. Happy 4th of July. My very best to you and yours until this Saturday at 11 or next Wednesday. Have a great one.
I'm looking for a factory where a man can feed his family. Not worried about them moving itself. Closing the doors, shutting her down tomorrow.